Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. We got a full complement today to talk about a not super great game. Tottenham lost to Liverpool at Anfield 2-1, and we're here to get into it. I am joined, as always, by my sidekick, Ben Daniels, by the proprietor of the Moussa Sissoko News Desk, Rob Reno Wallabout, and coming back to us to shed some sunlight or some sunshine on this just wonderful game we'll be talking about is our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we always pick good weeks to have you on, huh?
I love Tottenham Hotspur and talking about them.
Well, let's do that, unfortunately. This game, I don't know. Ben, did this game suck as much as the score sheet looks like it sucked?
You know, sucking is a real interesting metaphysical concept.
It's a state of being for us, at least, for this club.
I don't know. I watched the game. I saw, the numbers analysis after the fact. And I still don't have a great handle on just how I would rate this on, the suckitude scale. I mean, there's no question, I was at a bar watching this, and the game, they didn't have the game on, and as soon as the game finally came on the television, I saw the goal in the back of the net, or the ball in the back of the net, and I was like, oh, okay, well, this is weird, and this is going well. And I figured for, a second they must have been showing old highlights before the game started, because, I couldn't process. You know, we concede goals in the first 5 minutes of games. We don't score them. So it took me, 20 minutes for my brain to, wrap around the fact that we had the lead. But, you know, I mean, I think we set up to play a certain way that broadly worked.
But for about 20 minutes.
But it's not a pretty way. I mean, for longer than 20 minutes. I mean, yes, we got, hammered for, the entirety of the first half.
Well,
lot of the second half.
Yeah.
But, you know, the game plan seemed to be we were going to sit deep, eat pressure, block shots, and then try and hit them on the counter. And, you know, credit to our back line, we blocked a lot of shots. We, you know, kept them to not-so-dangerous chances. Gazzaniga played out of his mind. Toby and Davinson blocked a lot of shots. And it's if that's the game plan, it's hard to say we didn't execute it particularly well for long stretches of the match. But it was also horrible to sit through because we just got absolutely shelled. And it felt like we were going to go full Bayern Munich at any minute. And you know, the fact that we didn't, I guess, is great. I don't know. I guess I left the game feeling
Well, it felt to me I mean, my memory of the match was we started off well, and for the first, 25 minutes or so, this sort of, play him deep and hit him on the counter thing was sort of broadly working. They were creating some dangerous chances, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't feel like, holy shit, how have we not conceded yet? Or at least I feel like I've seen matches where that's been a lot worse. And frankly, we were creating a couple good chances or at least getting into dangerous positions. We were sort of getting behind their fullbacks. We were, you know, whatever sort of counter strategy we were trying to employ seemed to be broadly working. And then Liverpool seemed to figure it out and kick it into no other gear. And like you said, Gazzaniga just fucking saved our bacon and really, I think, played genuinely great. And then I think it stayed that way till about, I don't know, when Ndombele came on and we started to look a little more incisive. But I don't know. We talked about this last week a little bit in that, you know, Spurs look like they really figured something out against Red Star, and then our next match is against Liverpool, where I don't know, if Tottenham were having the kind of season that I thought we'd be having, a performance like this against Liverpool wouldn't have felt wildly out of whack. So, I don't know. This was not a good game to sort of evaluate where Spurs are, but then again, neither was Red Star. Michael, you... Oh, go ahead, Ben.
I guess the positive from that first half was, like, I didn't feel like how are we still alive so much as, boy, it would be nice to get out of our own half, which is a very small victory, you know. But we were not moving the ball well at all for a really long stretch there, and it was very, very concerning. And this is the problem we expected to have, and we all saw the lineup come out, you know, an hour before the game kicked off.
Right. I mean, I think that the experience of watching Gazzaniga have to save all those shots made it look like our defense was having more trouble than it was. I think that because Liverpool got 22 shots, but 15 of them were either headers or from outside the box. They were crossing all the time. And what happened was, in a bunch of situations, they got somebody wide in the box, just a tiny bit of space, or they got a shot off from outside the box, and it was a great shot. And then Gazzaniga also made a great save on it. And so that feels really dangerous. You're constantly, oh, thank God, oh, thank God, oh, thank God. But they were never really clearly in on goal. There was that one Mane header that he missed in the first half. That was pretty much it.
That didn't even feel like that clear of a chance. Like, I mean, that would have been a pretty spectacular goal if he'd scored it.
Yeah, I mean, he had to leap for it. But that was the one time when he got off the back of Toby and was free in a way that they were really weren't on their shots. Our defense played really well. The problem was that our defense played really well at defending, and then we had no way, exactly as Ben was saying, of actually moving the ball out against them. They completely crushed us with their press. But we just kept defending. We had bodies in the way of those shots. Like, expected goals in both StatsBomb system and mine came up about even, except for the penalty, which we can get into and was really stupid. Like, the weird thing about it is that the system kind of worked. We were definitely supposed to be able to pass the ball out better than that, and we were supposed to be able to counter better than that, but the defensive side and all these players who've been like, Toby had basically a perfect game.
And
Sanchez was good.
Basically a perfect game. He had one or two, you know. Like, when he gave them a quarter when he booted the ball out for no reason at one point, which led to some of their really good first half chances. But he played a lot better than he's played this year.
No, you cannot expect a center back under that kind of under that pressure to play any better than that. I know.
I'm nitpicking. I was just very mad when he allowed that corner, and then they got like three high quality chances off of it.
I mean, if it weren't for the phenomenally stupid penalty, whether it's stupid by Aurier or stupid by the rules of soccer or stupid by the ref or cheating by Mane, we can unpack that later. But if it weren't for that, you know, the game plan we set up with was, we're going to eat a lot of shots from not so dangerous areas, and we're going to create a couple of really good chances on the break. And that basically is what happened, and a 1-1 game wouldn't have felt...
I mean, a 2-1 for Spurs wouldn't have felt...
Or 2-2 if Son yeah. Spurs on the open net.
Right. But, like, I'm just saying, like, if we had walked out of that game 1-1, you know, one of their chances broke their way and we scored on a really good counter, you know, we'd be walking out of that game saying, you know, it wasn't an exciting game to watch, it wasn't very inspiring, but Pochettino set out to nullify Liverpool the best way he could and, you know, punch them in the mouth as much as he could, and it worked. And it's just really unfortunate, I think, that it just very much didn't because of one stupid, terrible moment.
Rob, was that a penalty?
Yeah, it's a penalty by the rules. It's an incredibly stupid rule that drives me completely insane, that you can begin to kick the ball and then have to stop kicking the ball halfway through because somebody gets in the way. But it's a correct application of the rules, and Mane is a cheat, and he's really good at it. And Serge Aurier is an idiot, so he's never going to get the benefit of the doubt from the referee on that.
Well, especially in this game where he was doing several dumb things and getting penalized for it.
Well, he's always doing dumb things, so if you're looking at that play, you're just assuming that he did something stupid.
I mean, if we're going to get that penalty they called on Lamella last year, I think we have to expect this to be a penalty, right?
Yeah, it's gonna
different.
Be a penalty.
It's different.
It's they're different, but I'm just saying we're talking about the same level of like.
But like, Lamella had like body position between Van Dijk and the ball when Van Dijk kneed him in the back of the leg. Mane did not have position between Aurier and the ball until like the second Aurier's leg connected with Mane. Like, you know, if an attacker initiates contact, if he like trips over a splayed leg, you would say, oh, that's a dive. You know, just because contact happened, if the attacker initiated the contact, it's not a penalty. And I don't know how to parse the difference between what happened against Liverpool and one of those kind of fouls. If Mane had fallen over Aurier's leg while it was like still like pulled back for the kick, you would say, obviously, that's not a penalty. But just because it happened on the follow-through when it was like, again, it was like the ball was in front of Serge Aurier. He had every right to kick that ball. It's just incredibly stupid that you can move yourself in front of someone else's leg and then that be a penalty. And then not be treated the same way as initiating contact in any other sort of situation. Like, again, it is a penalty, but it's bullshit. It's bullshit. And it's different than the Lamella penalty.
I just feel like if that one's getting called, they're gonna call this too. I was not happy with the ref's performance. I mean, broadly, that's not why we lost. But fuck, that really felt like some home cooking. Until like after the penalty, at which point I think the ref's opinion was like, "I gave you a penalty, leave me alone." But oh man, that was a frustrating game because it really did feel like we could have stolen one, and then just to give up a dumb penalty like that, just ugh.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, the big story of the game is not what worked and not what went wrong, but Pochettino's lineup decisions. Like, I just don't understand how, even if that's the way we're playing, why is Ndombele on the bench? And if he has to start on the bench because he's not fit, why is he on the bench that long?
Or why is he playing 90 minutes against Red Star?
Right. Why is he playing 90 minutes? Like, again, we were 3-0 up at the half. We were 4-0 up at 57 minutes. Why are we not taking him off and saying, okay, this guy can't go, you know, two 90s in a row. He's obviously our best player right now. We should preserve him so he can play, you know, even if we had to play him for 45, 50, 60 minutes, and then take him off. Like, that would have been better.
Even if you sub him on at halftime. Like,
right, just, like, I don't understand how he managed his fitness this week. It seems like a mistake.
But, well, like, okay,
in addition to that, we also have guys, like, so we, you know, we've talked a lot about the sort of dressing room cancerous situation and how bad is it really, and who are the real instigators here? But, you know, we dropped some guys for midweek, and we had a very good game. And then roll on Sunday, and we're seeing Danny Rose again. We're seeing Christian Eriksen again. And we're seeing Toby again. And, you know, the Toby thing worked, so I guess I can't complain about that. But Christian Eriksen was dog shit. You know, and maybe he wouldn't have played if Lamella hadn't gotten injured. But, like, you know, we still have Lucas, who every time he comes on the pitch looks great. And in a counterattacking setup, Lucas is really well suited to that. I just don't understand what we're doing here.
It's very frustrating to me.
Anybody have answers?
It's very frustrating to me because, you know, by all accounts, and maybe we're just projecting things on here, but, like, Eriksen seems to be the biggest problem child here. And, you know, like you said, Ben, like, I think Poch might have been vindicated in, like, putting Toby in or putting, rows on, but like, and maybe it was a last minute decision and that like, okay, Eriksen or Lamela's dead, I'm going to start Eriksen. But like, for as good as Eriksen's looked in the past, I mean, he's been awful for us since the Villa game this year. It's just terrible. And not just terrible in terms of by his standards, like he just doesn't offer us anything. I think, I was trying to think about this. The one thing about Eriksen I remember that was positive is he had a shot on goal that went just a little bit wide early in the game, and I don't think I can recall him doing anything well after that. And it's just, if this guy's going to offer us so little...
He either attempted or assisted. That was the one. That's it.
That's it? Oh.
Most of his passes didn't even make it to a teammate.
And if he's going to be this unproductive and he's a cancer in the team, like, what's he fucking doing there?
Yeah, he had like a 60% pass completion rate. And it wasn't because he was like playing these like crazy ambitious through balls that we weren't getting on the end of. He was just sloppy and shitty.
I mean, look, we know that part of the reason for this is Ndombele got hurt and maybe doesn't have the fitness levels either. Who knows why, but he doesn't have the fitness levels, probably because he was injured. And Lo Celso had the short preseason, and he was injured. So there's a reason those guys aren't getting games, and we can probably guess that they're getting some of the minutes that the malcontents should be getting some of the minutes that the malcontents are getting. But Jesus Christ, this is hard to watch sometimes.
Like, I mean, I hate caping for Lucas because I obviously don't like him as a person, but like, he was one of our best players last season. He was the hero in the Champions League.
He's looked good this year. He's
been great, whatever we've seen him. He looks like he cares. He's trying. He's running at guys. He's taking shots. He's creating shots. Like, why are we not seeing him?
Especially in a counterattacking setup.
Does anybody have a good answer?
And on top of that, like, Eriksen was not only trash, like, you know, creating chances, he also doesn't know how to defend as a wide forward on the right wing. And so what their most dangerous attacks regularly came through Robertson. Because, you know, Robertson was running down Eriksen's wing and against Aurier. Whereas Son was doing a ton of work to try to both contain Alexander-Arnold and to run in behind him and take advantage of his high positioning. And, like, another winger who knew how to do that would have been useful.
I mean, it sort of worked, but you got to think that anybody with a pulse would have done a better job than Eriksen did.
We know that Liverpool attack very heavily through their fullbacks. Like, they are basically, like, wide forwards who are nominally defenders. Like, they create tons of chances, they score goals, they assist goals. You know when you play Liverpool that Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are going to be all up your ass and, you know, trying to overload those spaces. So not only do you need extra help defending in those areas, but it means the places that Liverpool are most vulnerable are in the channels behind them when they get caught upfield. And having guys like Son and Lucas to counter into those spaces is, like, to me, a no-brainer. And, like, teams that beat Liverpool understand that that's where you dump balls and chase, because there's no one there, and there's room to exploit them on the counter.
It's especially irritating because I thought Son had a ton of success doing that against Liverpool. Like, he was making all sorts of trouble behind them, and you know, you like you said, Ben, you'd think that they would think of like, ooh, what if we could do this on both sides of the pitch? And it's not like Lucas is some like flair player. Like, he might not be the best defensively, but he does the scut work. He'll get his ass back there and work it and you know, put a shift in trying to do some defensive work. So it's like, now I'm mad again.
But at least Lucas would make Robertson have to pretend to defend a little bit too.
If not, exploit him.
Maybe he couldn't spend the entire time in the attacking third. But Eriksen was not running behind anybody. There was one sequence where he did, and then he got the ball and did nothing with it, and it was pretty much the summation of his performance. I forgot he was on the field at one point.
And, like, again, like, even if you're not starting him, what minute do you think Lucas came on the pitch? Just guess.
80th.
Yeah, 78th.
The 84th minute. how are you giving this man 5 minutes of time? And again, they scored the penalty in the 75th minute. How are you making zero changes for 10 minutes? Like, it's just, I just don't understand the game management here and how that happens.
Look, I'm sure there are things going on with this team that we are not aware of, but as far as we can tell and read the tea leaves, none of this made any sense. Let's jump back for a second. Michael, you've seen enough of him this year. You pay a lot of attention to football in general. Is Eriksen done? Because it sure looks like it.
Yeah, I mean, he's 27, and it's very hard to read this as anything other than this guy isn't giving all of his effort.
Seems like a bad way to get a new contract. Like, at another team, not even Spurs.
They don't understand the concept of walk years in soccer, apparently.
Exactly.
I guess they just don't have any experience with the concept. But, like,
exactly. It's
like if you're going to get a new contract,
to have your...
yeah, you have your best season right before you hit free agency so that you can get a really good new contract. You don't
right.
like
and instead
in.
They're like mad at their team for not selling them so they have a bad season, which is going to make his next contract smaller.
Not to mention, I mean, a report came out today from Ornstein in The Athletic that Eriksen only wanted moves to Barcelona and Madrid, neither of which made an offer. Now, I don't know if they got scared off by Levy or they felt us out for what we wanted and they just weren't interested. But it doesn't seem like they were overly interested in Spurs, in getting Eriksen out of Spurs. And, I mean, I don't know where Eriksen's going to go next year. Because, I mean, if I'm Madrid, I'm not going to give him any money.
I mean they should.
What, should
I mean,
they?
Is like, if Eriksen's dog shit this season, you know, if you can get Christian Eriksen on a free transfer, you should buy him because he's a very good player.
I mean, they have a ton of number 10s, and Eriksen has looked like garbage this year. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, if I can see other teams offering him a ton of money, but the teams he seems to want to go to, like, the way he's playing this year, man, I don't know if I'd buy him.
I mean,
he's not coming back, so... He may have to change his career plans. If he's not going to Barcelona or Madrid, as a free agent, there will be plenty of teams in countries like Italy and Germany who will give him a nice contract, since there's no transfer fee.
Yes, but those don't seem to be the teams he wants to go to. Now, I think reality is going to catch up with him in that regard, but...
I mean... The thing about Madrid and Barcelona is they've been known to do incredibly stupid things with their money. So what's one more number 10 for them? Why not?
Right. But they also, the other thing is that they're not smart either. And I think that's the thing is like a smart team would see Eriksen's down here as a product of what it is and recognize that you're getting a world-class talent for free and you know,
we'll ball him on the contract.
Not sweat this, right. But, you know, the thing is these teams aren't smart. They don't do smart things. They're not making these savvy free agent buys. They're splashing, you know, 100 million pounds on the newest flash-in-the-pan sexy signing. And if Eriksen has a bad year, he is not that. So...
Well, also, they're money laundering operations, so... I don't know. There may be some sort of tax loophole that would benefit them to give him 400,000 euro a week, but I don't really see one. I think that the bottom line here is that him just sulking all season and playing like garbage doesn't really benefit anyone.
No, it doesn't. And it's insane to me that he's not proving everybody wrong, whether it's Madrid, Barcelona, Spurs. Like, I would be playing with a huge chip on my shoulder if I were him.
Yeah, I mean, the only chip we've seen is him punching his teammate in the eye. So we're not doing that anymore.
No,
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know how to play motivated when he's been cuckolded in front of his entire team. But
again, the question remains: why are we fucking playing
it? I completely agree, especially if this is what he's going to give us. Like, it's not even like he's giving us these individual moments of quality and not playing in the team dynamic. He's just bad.
Right, especially in the game like against Liverpool at Anfield, a very high leverage game. It's like, if Eriksen wants to work his way back into the team, you know what? Like, Watford was a game that you say, all right, Eriksen, show me that you care and show me that you want to do something. You don't take your first chance on him in weeks against Liverpool. Like, what? Why? How does that make sense?
It sure seems like Pochettino constructed these tactics for Lamella, and then instead of changing them and bringing in Lucas, he brought in Eriksen.
Well, that didn't work. It sort of worked, actually.
Sounds so crazy.
That's my guess as to what happened, because it doesn't really make sense from other angles. And we know that Lamella picked up a late injury.
Well, God knows we know Pochettino wouldn't engage in tactics that don't make sense this year.
But can we talk about how, everyone predicted this midfield couldn't handle Liverpool's press, and then that was basically true, except one time Sissoko dribbled three guys?
That was pretty funny, actually.
That was really
funny. I mean, I think
the rest of it was...
You're right. I mean, we have a tendency to overlook... I mean, Wink sucks, but we have a tendency to overlook he's not a bad defensive player. Like, if he can't progress the ball at all, but...
No, he's a bad defensive player. I mean, he was fine keeping the space between him and the center backs tight.
Yeah, I said not good, but, you know... Especially compared to what we have come to think of him in the offensive half of the game. I mean...
Yeah, no, he's a bad... I mean, in a situation where he has very, very little ground to cover, he's reasonably useful, but he's a bad defensive player.
I mean, he's a guy who, like, makes tackles and makes tackles well. And so when you're sitting in a very deep block and he doesn't have to defend in transition, like, yes, he can get in front of a guy, he can lay on the ground in front of a shot, like, he can do that stuff. And so, like... His defensive frailties that normally manifest in an open game where he has to defend in transition, where he's normally like a complete sieve, like that wasn't as much of a problem. But, you know, again, we could not move the ball out of our own half. There was a stretch, I think, of 5 minutes in the first half. I saw stats where Liverpool took, I think, six shots in 5 minutes, and we completed one pass.
Yeah, it was very, very bad. That was the point where, right as everyone was starting to wonder, like, oh, why are Liverpool having trouble unlocking Spurs today? As soon as we all said that, they just flipped the switch, and I don't know. What I thought was interesting about this midfield was, I thought, and Ndombele came on for Winks, right? I'm not misremembering that?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought he and Sissoko, and we've seen this before, didn't look that bad next to each other. It's making me think, like, what if Winks is what's doing all of this? What if you put Sissoko next to a competent midfielder if it all looks a lot different? I mean, we could probably still do a lot better, but...
I think Ndombele can carry either of them, but the two of Winks and Sissoko together is just terrible. Like, they are not a functioning midfield. They don't defend well, they don't progress the ball well, they don't do anything. But
especially if you're playing the tactics that we needed to play against Liverpool, you can't have those two who can't... Sissoko can't pass.
Well, you sort of can. I mean, it kind of works. Like, it kind of worked against Liverpool. Like Michael was saying, like, beyond all reason...
Sissoko can progress the ball by dribbling, again, but he can't pass. Or he can't pass accurately enough to... really, to create an effective attack. And there were several instances where we did win the ball back, and it was with Winks. And the goal of our tactic was get the ball up as fast as possible, and he just wouldn't do it. And then we'd lose the ball.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the fullbacks are also bad at this.
Oh, God.
Neither Ore or Rose is a good quick ball progressor, a good long passer. Like, the only good long passer we had in the... What we did was we dropped Dele in. And so Delly and Toby, we just had to pray one of them got on the ball and could launch it. That was the system.
Or Gazzaniga. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, but Gazzaniga created more chances than Christian Eriksen Sunday.
We'll get into Gazzaniga in a second, because that is the one unreservedly positive thing we have to say about this game. But I want to – let's stick on fullbacks for a second. Michael, I know we've had this argument a little bit in the writer's room. I don't understand. When you look at what Aurier gives us and when you look at what what else we've seen out of our fullback position on the right this year, I don't understand why Kyle Walker-Peters isn't getting minutes. He's probably not good. It can't be worse than this. And at this point,
it can.
I'm awful. Skeptical it could be worse than this. Like,
I think all our options are trash. I think that there are no good options at all, which is what we're coming into the year.
I think Kyle Walker-Peters is the only option that might end well. I don't think it necessarily will, but it's the only one that might have a good ending, or at least not a total disaster of an ending.
But I don't agree. I mean, I think the answer is try Juan Foyth there. Again, I'm not like convinced that Juan Foyth is a great fullback, but Pochettino seemed to be convinced that Juan Foyth could play right back, and that was going to be the plan going into the season.
I forgot he was healthy. We rushed him back
from Argentina to get back in the team so we could try him out more in preseason, and then he got hurt. And now that he's healthy, and again, just was playing right back for Argentina over the international break, and their manager, Luis Scaloni, was like, he's great. You know, if that was the plan all summer, why we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it at all. Just fucking try it. I don't know.
I think it's been really interesting how hesitant Pochettino has been to put some of these injured guys back in the lineup today. And in the past, he's been, fairly good at managing players who are injured, but it's both Kyle Walker-Peters and Foyth, and I guess Ndombele to an extent, he's been more hesitant to use them since their injuries than I would have expected.
I mean, the thing is that the pattern of things here was that we looked at this team, and we were like, this team desperately needs a right back, probably two right backs. And Pochettino seemed to have this thing where he thought maybe Juan Foyth could be one of those right backs. So we're going to sell Aurier. But then we didn't sell Aurier, but Pochettino seemed not – we were going to sell Aurier, and then it was like, okay, I guess he thinks that Walker-Peters and Foyth can be our right backs, and that doesn't really make any sense because Foyth isn't a right back, and Kyle Walker-Peters has been bad every time he's played. And then we're going to do that, and then we didn't sell Aurier, so it's like, maybe, and like, none of it made any sense. All of the pieces either fit together in that Walker-Peters shockingly was good, or Foyth was going to be trusted.
And
but
it seems like the worst.
Made sense.
And then both of those guys got hurt, and now we're not going to try either of them.
Yeah, well, Pochettino sure seemed to lose this quickly. Like, it looked like he thought these were two possible options, and very quickly changed his mind.
Well, I mean, Foyth's been hurt all year, so.
The problem is the first part. Like, the idea that Juan Foyth and Kyle Walker-Peters are bad right backs is correct. Like, that right. We've all seen this over and over and over again. The weird thing was the period of time when people were decided that our plan was going to be that they were going to be not bad fullbacks.
Well, to be fair, we don't know that about Juan Foyth, but it is a gigantic risk to assume that he'll be good at it.
Right, but I guess my question is like, if you were prepared to take that risk going into the season, and you clearly looked at Serge Aurier and said, he is surplus to my requirements, I don't need him. He's been a piece of shit. He sucks. Whatever. We're going to get rid of him. What changed in Pochettino's brain about believing Juan Foyth was a starting right back for a title-contending team to Juan Foyth will not be trusted in any context whatsoever? I don't understand.
Well, I would flip that question, Ben, because I could believe that with Foyth, Foyth just played for Argentina in that role. I can believe there's like some fitness issues there if you told me. I mean, maybe the same is true of Walker-Peters, but Walker-Peters seems to have been fit for longer. And maybe Walker-Peters is bad, but like you said, Ben, Pochettino sure seemed ready to roll the dice with that guy early in the season, and then he just got hurt. And now he's just playing Serge Aurier in every match. And that neither of those guys is getting a real look in is a little perplexing to me. Even if it's maybe not the best plan in the world, it sure seemed like a plan we were ready to fuck with at the beginning of the year.
But I can believe that Juan Foyt could be a good fullback. Like, we've seen, he can pass, he can move the ball. He's not, he just makes individual terrible defensive decisions occasionally. The
Imagine
evidence we
playing
have
a right
Kyle
back
Walker-Peter,
who plays terrible defensive decisions every once in a while. And maybe
right,
gives
I mean,
away.
Juan Foyt is basically just Serge Aurier with a different set of positives. Whereas Kyle Walker-Peter is like, I haven't seen him be good at playing fullback. Like,
well,
he's won three
Premier League Man of the Match awards, Michael. So.
I just think that the idea that Kyle Walker-Peters should be in there is really, like, waiting on some evidence.
I think it's a little... it might be crazy without content. I guess what I'm saying is we don't seem to have the... It's lacking the writers for Tottenham are not showing internal consistency at a minimum, if that makes any sense. This seemed to be something we were prepared
absolutely.
To do. He didn't get exiled for whatever we think of him. He only hasn't been playing matches since the second week because he got hurt. Like, he didn't play badly, and that's what got him kicked out of the team. He was injured. And it's just very perplexing to me that they were ready to roll with it, and now they're not. And it's not because he played. I mean, maybe he sucks in training now. I don't know. But they were ready to fuck with this early in the season, and now they seem no longer prepared to do it. And it's just a little perplexing from an internal consistency standpoint.
Right, the writers did all this world building, and I was led to believe that it worked a certain way, and they really pulled the rug out from under me.
I mean, there could be, like I said earlier, we don't know everything that's going on. He could suck in training, he might have told Pochettino that he doesn't like cryptocurrency, who knows? But something, either something happened, or maybe Pochettino just thinks, oh, he got hurt, so he sucks, which I feel like does kind of happen sometimes with this team.
I mean, look, sometimes your plan is that wizards just shit themselves and then they use a magic spell to make the shit disappear. And then you realize that's a bad idea and you change the plan when you finally go to print. But, you know.
Kyle Walker-Peters is a wizard that shits and pisses himself.
Yeah.
Well, we finally got to it. Let's talk about the one thing that we can all be unreservedly positive about from this match. Rob, how good was Gazzaniga in goal?
He was okay.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Very on brand of you.
He was very good at
try again, Eeyore.
Many, many shots that he faced. And he created more chances than Christian Eriksen. He was good. He was really good. It was the one positive.
But this is what you want to have in a backup keeper. Like, I don't know if Gazzaniga is good enough to actually start for Spurs. I thought all that talk last season was incredibly, like, overcooked. But, you know, this is what you want out of a backup, especially for... I mean, I don't know. I feel like any team in the world would have been happy with this performance out of a backup. But, I don't know. He's very good at shot stopping. He's a very tall man. And, frankly, he's better at distribution than Hugo. And he had a hell of a game. I mean, he stopped some really good shots from Liverpool in the first half.
He had the game that the keeper usually has against Tottenham.
Yeah, it would have been nice if we could have gotten a bullshit undeserved win off the back of his performance.
Right, but that's why it's Tottenham, is it's not, you know, Tim Krul making 15 saves. It's Tim Krul making 14 saves and then throwing one in the back of his net just to ruin the narrative. You know, any other team, Gazzaniga would have shut them out. But for Spurs, that phenomenal backup goalkeeper performance is coupled with a 2-1 loss. And that sucks.
I mean, that double save of his was so good. I mean, both of them were just...
I really thought he was going to save the penalty. And then he didn't
even
move.
Me too. Me too. Because he's a shot stopper. That's what he... I think that and distribution are the things where... Probably distribution is a wider gap, actually, but he's a better shot stopper than Hugo. I don't know if he plays the ball well or organizes the defense as well, but I think he's a better shot stopper, and it was just, you could see that on display. He did a really good job.
And he saved a bunch of penalties in the past. So that was, in fact, very good writing. because we all thought he was going to save it.
Jesus.
They pulled the rug out from under me again.
They subverted our expectations.
Tottenham. I mean, Tottenham had a thrilling, been a thrill-a-minute ride this season, even if we don't like where it's going.
Well, it's much like Temple of Doom. The writers have dabbled in horror in this particular.
And, you know, probably a little bit of racism if you dig hard enough. Yes, it's it hasn't been a fun season. Michael, we haven't had you on much this season. Tottenham are 8 points out of fourth place. How are you feeling about their chances of making the Champions League this year?
Well, it's this weird thing, because, like, Spurs have played awful. Like, we've been not just easily the worst team of the Big Six, but, like, a bottom-half team on the quality of our play. It's been terrible. And yet, we've taken enough points, and other teams, luckily United, Arsenal, have been bad enough that we're not completely out of it. And we've now had two games where we look like, you know, this game was annoying to watch. It was difficult. Liverpool were on top of us. Our midfield was weak. But, like, we didn't look like we were pissing and shitting ourselves on the pitch like we had been previously.
Hey, two good performances in a row.
Two solid performances in a row. And so, like, if this team, like, gets their heads out of their asses and gets a little bit of good fortune, they're still in it, which is, like, on the one hand, it's maddening. It is, like, stupid. Everyone is awful and should feel bad about themselves that we played so badly for 10 games. But we did, and we're still in it. So, I don't know.
And our captain has not been booed off the field yet.
Well, so, Michael, I wanted to talk to you about that, too, because you cover the league sort of in general for, I mean, in general for what you do, but also for your podcast, The Double Pivot. So who's having a worse year? I mean, on points it's Spurs, but Arsenal almost, like, I don't know, after this week, I'm not sure who's having a worse season right now. Like,
right,
it's a,
like,
real toss up.
If you look at the waveforms, like, we've been below Arsenal basically all season. And right now, like, Arsenal is just starting to dip possibly below us, and it's very enjoyable.
It is. I mean, honestly, Tottenham ought to be commend. You know, they're talking about modern football, how, like, teams never give back to their communities. But all year, Spurs have taken the heat off of North London resident Emery, Unai Emery. And it's just, I think if Tottenham weren't having the year they were having, it would be so much worse at Arsenal right now. I mean, it is not going well over there, and it's, at least we have that to live off of.
It really is hilarious, and his obsession with playing Granit Xhaka at the base of midfield while not having possession of the ball is amazing.
Well, that might not be a problem for him much longer.
Their forwards just, like, not quite being as good as they were supposed to be is delightful. And their defenders can't defend, just like we expected. And like, the whole team just doesn't make any sense.
If only we were, you know, good.
I know.
I don't know. It just, looking at the future of this team, it's just, I don't, you could sort of see the beginning of something this week, maybe, where you could convince yourself they're going to play well. I mean, I'm probably just lying to myself, but, man, I don't know. You just hope with, I mean, he played Lo Celso in the actual midfield against Liverpool. Maybe he'll do it in a real game.
Yeah, Lo Celso at the base of midfield was fun. I was into it. Lo Celso and Ndombele playing in midfield were just a little bit together. It was delightful. One stat I've got, I wanted to make sure I got this here. Fully one half of Spurs' completed passes into the penalty area were by Tanguy and Ndombele.
Not a shock. Not a shock.
Yeah. Like, he completed 10 passes. 3 of them were into the penalty area.
And his incompleted passes were freaking amazing, too. Even though they weren't completed.
That first pass, maybe not the first pass he attempted, but the first, like, ambitious pass where he, like, outside the booted it and tried to find I think it was Sun over the top, and Van Dyke just got ahead to it. Was like almost like the most gorgeous pass I've ever seen.
It would have been obscene.
I love him so much.
It's, you look at the players on this team, and I'm not even talking about like a turd like Eriksson, who is like dogging it right now. But you look at the players on this team, and you just, I struggle to understand how bad we've been this year when you look at some of those guys. I mean, I think we all have ideas of why this is the case, but it's just like, I don't understand how we've played like this this year. It's fucking unbelievable. Like, after we were in a Champions League final, like, I don't understand how this happened. Like, this team is too good to play like this. This isn't like Arsenal, where I think they are actually much worse than their results said last year. But I just, I don't get it. I don't, there's too many good players for this team to play like this. And I think we're probably going to miss the Champions League this year. Because, you know, and if we do make it, it's only because everybody else has been absolute dog shit. Like Michael was saying.
If we do make it, it'll be because we won the Europa League after finishing third in our
Jesus group. Christ.
What if, Greg, and bear with me here, what if they start playing the good players? What if we finally
playing
do
some
that
of the good
thing?
Players? I mean,
but what if we play the good players who played against Red Star, but against real teams?
I mean, I don't know. That would be nice. What if we started sitting Winks and Sissoko? I mean, this game actually gave me a little bit of hope. This game and the game at midweek, because I think he was definitely playing to win that game at midweek because he knew he needed to stop the bleeding. And frankly, like, you know, we're probably going to lose to Liverpool anyway, so whatever. But it gives me a little bit of hope he knows that, like, Winks and Sissoko are not the path forward, or at least not them at the same time. Maybe I am being extremely optimistic in that assessment, but I got that vibe.
He goes out of his way to defend the two of them. So
I don't expect Pochettino to say what we're all actually thinking in public. Like,
no,
he's got to make his players
sound
good.
And that's fine. But like, Ndombele should be starting now. And Lo Celso should be playing more than like 12 minutes at a time.
We play Everton
and suddenly,
this week.
It's midfield.
We're running out of excuse. Like, look, you don't want to throw him in the lines then against Liverpool. Fine. He's coming off an injury. Okay. I don't like it, but I understand why he's not starting against Liverpool this past weekend. But, like, that dude needs to be starting some league matches soon.
Yeah, like now.
Like Everton. Like, well, I think there's no excuse not to start him against Everton.
And, you know, Ndombele and Sissoko is a moderately functioning midfield. If you don't want to bench both of them.
It's just, we need to start winning league matches, like, soon. Because Spurs, if we're going to make the Champions League, yeah, we can rely on these other teams to suck, but Spurs need to go on, like, a real run for a while. I mean, results need to improve, but there needs to be a period where we're just hoovering up points. And sooner rather than later, it'd be good, because, I mean, I'm not sure Leicester can keep this shit up all season, but they look like they got a lot more staying power than I think any of us thought at the beginning of the year. So, I mean, we got our work cut out for us, and I think while the results were encouraging, as far as you would say that against the last two teams, they need to start getting better.
We've at least gotten the three hardest fixtures of the season out of the way.
I mean, that is something, actually.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever. They're done. We don't have to do them now, so...
We've also gotten two of the easiest fixtures out of the way and taken 1 point from them. But, you know,
right? Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, there is that. But suddenly, like, except for Hugo, everyone's mostly healthy. So play the good players, and suddenly there's a midfield. And with the midfield, everything gets a little bit better. Fullback is still a garbage fire, but... You can fudge that.
I'll tell you what scares the shit out of me, and less so for fullback, but... If this team really needs to continue rebuilding, I mean, we're going to probably be able to get something in January, but I'm a little worried about having to do that with the Europa League. You know, if we don't qualify for Champions League and we qualify Europa League, like, yes, next year Ndombele and Lo Celso will be integrated into the team and they'll probably be better and be playing well, but like, you know, part of the reason we got Ndombele this year was like, shit, Spurs were in the Champions League final. Spurs are in the Champions League. Like, they're playing really well right now. They're better than Arsenal and all these other fucking teams. Which isn't to say you can't get good teams to play for a Europa League team, but, I mean, if we really need to sort of, like, turn this roster over and get some good players in here.
I'm not that worried about it, honestly.
Really?
Because who's going to want to leave who didn't already want to leave?
I mean, I think holding on to Kane and Son might be a real problem.
Harry Kane and Dele Alli.
Son?
Look, the reality is Dele can't go anywhere, and if Kane can't go anywhere, they have huge contracts, and if we decide we don't want to sell them, you know, that's never worked out poorly for us. But in terms of, like, being able to attract talent, you know, I don't think we're going to need, like, real marquee superstars like Ndombele and Lo Celso. You know, we're going to need a right back. And, like, that's not the hardest position to fill with good talent from, like, a mid-tier club. Same with a center back. Like, those are guys we can buy smartly on the cheap. You know, and, like, we pay real salaries now, you know? Like, we've seen Chelsea and Man U and Arsenal and Liverpool be Europa League teams in recent years and still be able to buy very good talent, you know, because they're willing to pay a real salary, and that's enough, honestly.
Will we keep paying real salaries without the Champions League, though?
Yeah, we have the stadium.
Oh.
We're rich now. We're rich now.
I fucking hope you're right, guys.
And yeah, we're not moved into this new stadium and a year out of a Champions League final, and now we're going to start pinching pennies and not pay players. Like, we know what it looks like to challenge for titles and be a competitive team at the top of the table. Like, we're not going to stop doing that. And especially only 1 year removed from it. You know, yeah, maybe in, like, if the next 3 years we're finishing, like, eighth, you know, suddenly the wage bill might tighten. But, like, this summer, I don't think that's a problem at all.
I don't know, man. Like, all the rumors we've heard, which who knows how true they are, is Pochettino is real precious about who we sign, and doing that in the Europa League might just be a bit of a challenge. I don't know. I'm probably just being pessimistic.
I think that Spurs fans told themselves a lot of stories about how Champions League made a big difference to players. And what mostly happened is we suddenly were able to sign players when we had, like, lots of money to pay more wages. I just don't think it's that big a deal.
I mean,
it was the wages, not the Champions
League. I think Pochettino helps signing players. I think we're able to get some guys in there because before this season, we had what looked like one of the three best managers in the world coaching us.
But again, those are things that United has Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They can sign whoever they want. Like, once you've got money, like, this is like the economic hell world of the Premier League and of European soccer, is that there isn't a way to move down once you've moved up.
I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
Like, I mean, you're right that Champions League finals and Pochettino, like, those things help, but they help on the margins. You know, if we're in a competitive bidding war and we're offering the same salary that United is for a guy, having Pochettino and being a real Champions League competitor, you know, might edge us in that bidding war. But other than that, you know, being in a Champions League gives us money, which allows us to make signings. But like Michael said, now that we have the stadium and the past 5 years that we've had, like, we are now a financially viable team that we can just buy players.
Well, who needs the Champions League when Amazon's paying us to be humiliated worldwide on streaming, so.
Right. I mean, like, yes, but, like, also yes.
Yeah. Like, I was entirely serious about everything I just said. Like,
and just think how much beer we're going to sell in the Europa League.
Bottoms up, baby.
So.
Those are the best headlines all year. I love them every time.
I gotta say, my friend actually went to a game at the new stadium, and he said easily the most impressive thing was how they filled the beer. And he wasn't even being a dick about it. He was, like, very genuine about how impressive that was.
We can definitely sign players off the back of that, right?
I would hope so. I mean, that's how we get Berbatov nowadays. I mean, I presume they could fill a champagne glass the same way. I don't know.
Do we have cigarette vending machines in the new stadium?
The cheese room is now a smoking lounge.
That's our path back to glory, fellas. So let's go around real quick to wrap up. How are we feeling about Everton? We've had, since the international break, we've had a really shitty performance, a very good performance against a bad team, and a better-than-we-expected performance against a great team. Like, how are we feeling going into Everton?
Everton suck. They just lost to Brighton.
Good. There's no way we could fuck that up.
They conceded 3 goals to Brighton. I mean,
who imagine losing to Brighton.
Look at us.
Yeah, just look at us. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Not me. Now, Everton suck. Like, we should beat them. We might not, because we also suck, but Everton suck.
I mean, I just... put these fucking new... Start... Just fucking play Lo Celso and Ndombele. Like, just... Like, stop just fucking around. Just do it.
Just do it.
Don't, like, send Eriksen to, like... I don't know. What's that fucking Swedish club we signed an agreement with? Send him there. Like... I'm so dumb. I can't believe how mad I am at Eriksen. Like, I never thought I would be this mad at Christian Eriksen. I thought he might leave one day, and I would have made my peace with that. I would have been like, Christian Eriksen, go with God. Like, go live your best life in Madrid or whatever. And he's here, and I fucking hate him. And I look him in the pitch. Like, I get mad when I watch Christian Eriksen on the pitch. It's very frustrating.
He is now what some Spurs fans always thought he was.
Yes. But those Spurs fans were very dumb until... I mean, they're still very dumb, but...
Right, but now he actually looks like that.
It's horrible. He's my favorite player, and now I hate him. I hate him so much. I'd much rather sell a guy to Madrid than watch whatever this is.
That's honestly
a lesson for us, I think.
That's kind of what's made this year so shitty for me. I mean, you know, maybe we turn it around, maybe whatever. But, like, this has been one... The last few years of Spurs, not last year, really, but, like, this team, the core of this team, they've been... It's been one of my favorite, like, teams to watch in like, any team I follow, any, like, you know, fandom that I've had. And just, like, sort of watching it fall apart like this has been really unpleasant, and I have not enjoyed it. Beyond just, like, it's hard to watch the games, but it's, like, sort of souring my memory of, like, you know, how I'm going to think about these guys. Maybe it won't. Maybe time will heal all wounds, but, like, I don't know. I'm very irritated about Christian Eriksen, and I don't see that ever entirely going away.
Yeah, I hate him.
Yeah.
Ugh, fuck that guy.
It's all trash.
Yeah. You know what's really funny about all this? If we'd won the Champions League final, we could have had the exact same season, and I would not give a fuck. It would actually be funny to me. Oh,
you'd be so pissed.
I would be.
I imagine the podcast. We won a Champions League final. This is how you're going to go into the next season? This is ridiculous.
I don't know, but then I would think about how we won a Champions League final, and it would be real. And I would just be like, "Oh yeah, we did that." I could spend 10 minutes on YouTube, and I'd feel a lot better.
It would definitely help.
Anyway, Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, and you can find me on Tumblr at Michael Cayley.
Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can listen to The Double Pivot and subscribe at patreon.com/doublepivot, and you can read all of my takes on vegan cookery at brettrainbow.tumblr.com.
The funny thing is that's not a joke. That's actually a fact.
I actually use that cookbook a lot. It's really good. It really is.
Rob, where can people find you online?
You can find me continuing to tweet about the Mets managerial search at Reno Wallabout.
And you can find me not being mad and thinking it's all actually very funny on Twitter at skipjack0079. And, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn as Brett Rainbow. So, for Michael, for Rob, for Ben, and, of course, for Brett Rainbow, come on, you Spurs.